Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, another big Supreme Court ruling down today that we'll talk about in a little while. They struck down a campaign financing system in Arizona that gave extra cash to publicly funded candidates who face privately funded rivals and independent groups with deep pockets. In other words, the Supreme Court ruled in a divided court, 5-4 along ideological lines, that you don't have to prohibit speech in order to violate the First Amendment by the taxpayers giving money to other candidates who compete with deep-pocketed rivals. By giving some money to spend more on speech, they were in effect prohibiting the speech or discouraging the speech of the rich candidates and the independent groups. So that's pretty interesting, and we will get a breakdown on that from Dahlia Lithwick of Slate. Coming up a little bit later on this hour, we'll see if that might affect New York's matching law. A lot of public money going in a matching system to candidates here so they can compete with people like Mayor Bloomberg who have deep pockets running against them. So that's coming up. But now, turning to the world of work, do you feel like you're working more and more hours for less and less money? It's because you probably are, according to the cover story of the latest issue of Mother Jones. And here's something else from Mother Jones that might make your blood boil. Many corporations that have laid off staff in recent years are increasingly passing down tasks to their remaining employees whose workload keeps piling up. Does this sound familiar to you? And they're doing it at a time when corporate profits are, in many cases, going up or at least strong despite the struggles of the economy as a whole. Technically, corporate profits up 22% since 2007, according to a new report by the Economic Policy Institute. So joining us to talk about the trend of more work for less is Clara Jeffrey, who is the co-editor of Mother Jones and who co-authored this latest cover article called The Speed Up. Hi, Clara. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Your show is one of the things I most miss about New York.
Oh, that's
glad to be here.
Nice of you to say. And Mother Jones is in California. You're in the San Francisco area, right? So
that's right.
We listeners, we're going to take your calls on this. Are you being asked to do more at work, at your job? If so, you're probably not listening to the radio right now, but maybe you are. Are you being compensated for it? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post a comment to our webpage at WNYC.org or our Facebook page. So, Clara, your article is titled The Speed Up. Why that word?
Well, that word has meant an employer demanding increased output for no change in wages. And it's a term that used to be known to workers. It was negotiated over by unions. People walked out over it. But now we don't use that term anymore in blue-collar work or pink or white-collar work. But it's happening to all of us. More and more work is being piled on the remaining people after layoffs and others and downsizing of other kinds. And as a result, we Americans now work 122 hours more than our British counterparts, for example, and 378 hours more than our German counterparts per year. That's 10 weeks.
That's a lot of work. But, you know, we've had these conversations even before the financial crisis in 2008, how Americans just have been working harder and harder in the multimedia age. You know, people in certainly mostly in certain professional kinds of fields check their BlackBerries at the beach and, you know, all this stuff that we've been talking about for years and years before the financial crisis. So something is new here.
I think what's new is that essentially the economy has recovered for corporations. I mean, we see corporate profits are back 22% over the part that they were before the crash, not at the trough of the crash, but before the crash. And yet our workforces are not coming back. And so we talk a lot about, of course, the plight of the unemployed. But what is also happening is there's no less work to be done. It's just being shoved onto the people who still have jobs. We call this phenomena offloading. We know a lot about offshore jobs. But if an offloaded job is essentially a person gets fired and their job is divided amongst two or three people.
Is it so simple, though, as to say that corporations are doing better than ever, that 22% increase in corporate profits figure compared to 2007. I mean, we're also seeing evidence of a continually depressed economy all around us. I think the Fed last week just downgraded its projection for growth in the third quarter from 4%, or maybe it was Goldman Sachs, but the Fed did something similar too, down from 4% to 2% annual growth. I mean, companies are struggling as well as workers, aren't they?
Well, some companies are struggling, but I think one of the things that we found is just that the productivity, quote unquote, being wrung out of every worker is increasing year over year, no matter what the economy. And I think it's also telling that our counterparts in Europe and in Asia, our growth, our overall economic growth is back up close to where it was. But the jobs aren't being hired back, whereas they are in these other countries. They've restored their workforce. We haven't. So, I mean, it's of course very complicated economics. But to grossly simplify, I mean, it's more work being done by fewer people.
Let's take a phone call. Alexis in Bay Ridge. You're on WNYC. Hi, Alexis.
Hi. Good morning, Brian. Nice to talk to you. I actually chose to leave a theater administration job because so much of the staff had been cut back that my work pile became unbearable, and they had also cut my pay and my benefits. So, I at a very bad time in the recession, I chose to leave a job, and so I couldn't get unemployment, and I just had to be forced to find another job.
Mm. What was it like outside of yourself? How did it affect the company to have, so much fewer staff picking up so many tasks?
Morale was very, very low. I wasn't the only one who wanted to leave. A lot of people felt that they couldn't, and for a long time I felt that I couldn't, but then I felt forced to. You felt a little bit bullied, you felt like, well, now I must do these tasks, and I'm under a thumb because they know that I'm not going to put myself out in the job market at this point. And they were wrong. I did put myself in the job market. I didn't really want to, but I did.
And do you think the company, with whatever was happening to their own revenues, had a choice? I mean, there is the whiff of this is, corporate greed in Clara's article.
This might sound idealistic, but hey, it's WNYC. I think that companies should do the exact opposite. When forced with a recession, they should hire more people. They should try to find ways to, help out what's going on in the world. There's people out of work, and there's a lot to be done. And I think that they would increase their revenues if they were hiring more people and sort of forcing more productivity. I mean, that's what the government has to do now, right? I mean, they've got a stimulus package and they've got to create jobs for us. Why shouldn't companies take on some of that burden,
right?
Give
it a shot that way. Alexis, thank you very much. And yes, idealism is welcome here. So is hard-headed realism and pragmatism. It's all welcome here. Clara Jeffrey, any reaction to Alexis?
Well, I think Alexis' story rings true to a lot of people. We have a lot of as told tos in these articles, and it's across many different professions, everyone from folks, filling boxes out in warehouses in 115-degree heat to air traffic controllers and surgeons. And the phenomena of having more work shoved onto them is the same. And I think one of the things that we try and tell people is, you think that this is just your job or your company or your industry. Certainly the media has been guilty of that. We've obsessed about hamster wheel journalism and how we're all being made to do four different skill sets that we didn't have to do 5 years ago. But it's not just our profession. It's the overall economy. And this is a societal problem that we face. Therefore, the remedies are complex and sort of take time to both imagine and enact. But I think one of the things we have to do is just recognize how profoundly this is hurting American workers.
And you talk about hamster wheel journalism. I think David in Brooklyn may be on that wheel. David, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm a video journalist. I have been for about a year now, although I'm very fresh in the scene. I graduated from college last summer. So I'm very lucky and happy to have a job. I'll say that first and foremost. And when I'm on the scene, you know, covering a big news event and I'm up there with the big guys like CNN, I work for a local cable news station, but when I'm up there with CNN or a bigger news station, you know, some of the guys will see me doing everything from video to sound to editing to, you know, putting packages together and even in some cases putting up live shots, something that would take their crew 4 to 5 people to do. And they honestly say they're scared because where they used to be able to, you know, feed and work for a family, they're having kids fresh out of college getting paid half as much as one of them would get paid to do as much work as 3 to 4 of them would get paid. So it's a very, you know, for me, new on the scene, it's very interesting to see how they're reacting to that.
And I don't know the finances of the individual companies that you work for, but I imagine in the news media field, they might be pushing back against your call right now and saying, well, gosh, you know, the advertising revenue model of broadcast journalism is collapsing around us. This is the only way we can get the product on the air anymore. What do you say back to that?
Absolutely. I mean, it is, you know, technology is changing the pace of how a lot of people work, and that could be a huge part as to why these things are happening, why more people are expected to be doing more things, because a lot of this technology has made it easier, where big stations have to drive a truck to do a live shot. I have a backpack with a computer in it that allows me to broadcast live to my station. So, you know, technology has obviously had a big hand in making me be able to do these. Yes, sorry.
I think that you know, is true for some of the sea change that's undergoing journalism. But I think that because journalists have experienced a technological revolution in the last 5 years, it's in a way made them blind to the same pressures being forced on factory workers and doctors and nurses and everybody else. And so I would encourage journalists to sort of step back from our own, you know, profound problem that we love to obsess about and sort of see the larger picture. And one of the things that I would also say is, you know, after this article came out, I got contacted by several people who work for large Fortune 500 companies who said, you know, this is true. I am now being made to lay off more people, even though our profits are booming. And I'll tell you, I know the reason why, because they feel they can wring more work out of people. We're doing fine. We're doing great. But they just feel they can goose their profits even more.
It is funny. And David, thank you for your call. My guest, Clara Jeffrey, co-editor of Mother Jones magazine and co-author of the new cover story called The Speed Up, about how many Americans in many fields are being asked to work much more intensely during their hours of work, but not for more pay, as in many cases corporate profits rise. There's a stat that sometimes people love to cite, which is productivity. And they'll say, well, we're still in this economic slowdown, but good news, productivity is on the rise in the United States. Well, sometimes productivity means they're making their same workers work in this speeded up way for the same pay. And so, yeah, I guess you'd call that more productivity. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing.
Exactly. The way that productivity is calculated is generally only hours on the books. So that doesn't include the 11 p.m. BlackBerry sessions or the, you know, 6 a.m. phone calls. None of that off-the-books work is generally calculated when they take a look at productivity. And yet it still rises year over year over year.
Brian in Woodbridge, you're on WNYC. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to key on the point you made earlier that people aren't joining labor unions anymore. We're at a 7% average unionization rate in the private sector. And until some white-collar workers, nurses, doctors, lawyers realize that they can form unions too if they would take advantage of the Wagner Act, you can start to push back about, you know, at smaller workplaces first. But, you know, the CIO did the sit-down strikes in the 30s. Because of speed-ups. Until you start seeing some pushback and people form labor unions, it's going to keep getting worse.
Brian, thank you for your call. And Clara, certainly we just saw the rejection of a union organizing drive at the Valley Stream Long Island Target store the other week. That would have been the first Target in the country. That's a major employer. Then you have a lot of smaller workplaces where people may not think that unions are necessarily the answer, but what leverage do they have without unions?
I agree. I mean, unions are, you know, they're now overall, I think, just above 12% of the population, and they used to be just over 25, 26, a mere 30 years ago. More importantly, the union workers earn about $10,000 more on average than non-union workers. And I think what unions used to do for union workers and non-union workers is that they created a floor of wages that people could get paid and of ways that employers could treat people. So whether it is unions as we've known them or some other mechanism, I do think that workers have to get together and push back on this overall trend. One spot of good news on this front is that the National Labor Review Board had a decision about a week ago that should make it easier for people to organize or consider organizing without interference from their employers.
Why do you think, as a matter of policy, Americans aren't pushing their representatives more or their employers more to do something about this? You have this chart in your article that shows American productivity and wages since 1979, and you see this big red line going up and up with a few dips showing productivity growth exploding since then, and then there's this blue line showing average overall wages since 79, and that's pretty much a flat liner. So we know there's been middle class wage stagnation for decades in this country, and yet so many people still support policies that they hope will grow the economy, like tax cuts for the wealthy, but that in the short term seem to take money out of their pockets.
Well, and actually the scariest line on that graph is the one that goes into the stratosphere, and that's the average income of the top 1%. So I know that you and Dahlia are going to talk the Supreme Court decision that yet again has done anything to sort of keep the influence of the uber wealthy out of our politics. But essentially, that's the political change that needs to happen. We did another article a few issues ago that examined cited a study that examined the voting habits of U.S. senators. For Republican senators, they basically voted for working class and middle class interests, not at all. But Democratic senators were barely any better. Our political system has been captured by the interests and the influence of the super wealthy, and until we do something to take some of that power back, to restore some semblance of balance, we are going to be taken advantage of at work.
Clara Jeffrey from Mother Jones, the cover story in the new issue called The Speed Up. Thank you so much, Clara.
Thank you, Brian.
And yes, coming up next, Dahlia Lithwick from Slate. The last couple of major Supreme Court decisions for this term just came down. They have to do with campaign finance. They have to do with banning violent video game sales to minors. Can California and other states do that? We'll get the answer right after this.